Good morning and welcome to Local Matters Health Matters, where we spotlight key health issues and community concerns across the Upper Cumberland. I'm Dr. Emily Lee.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Mabry. We're professors at the Whitson Hester School of Nursing at Tennessee Tech University. This week, we are recognizing National Public Health Week in April. It's time to reflect on how we can create healthier communities, especially in rural areas like ours, by focusing on prevention, access to care, and the social and environmental factors that influence our well-being. Joining us today to talk about these important topics are Dr. Melissa Geist and Mrs. Carrie Cass. Together, we'll explore the impact of social determinants of health, how public health efforts can strengthen rural communities, and what steps we all can take to build a healthier Upper Cumberland. Dr. Geist, Mrs. Cass, thank you for both being here.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So, Dr. Geist and Ms. Cass, could you both start by telling us a little bit about your background in nursing and what inspired you to enter this field?
Thank you. I'll start first. This is Ms. Cass. So, I came to nursing a little bit later in life, in my mid-30s, and my background before that was teaching English as a second language and working a lot with different students from around the world. This change was due to marriage, happy marriage, and moving back to my hometown. And I was really looking for a career that would allow me to serve my community and, of course, also make a decent paycheck as well with that. And I found that nursing was really the answer to those two pieces. And it's been a really amazing part of my life since I made that choice.
Did your background at all before coming becoming a nurse influence you in any way? Anything you did, travels, experiences?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been fortunate to travel abroad a lot and to work in a lot of developing countries. So I've had the chance to go to Ghana, West Africa. That was kind of more of a cultural experience, and I saw what it meant to live in a country with very limited resources. And then later on, I was a Peace Corps volunteer in El Salvador for almost 3 years, working in communities who, again, have very limited resources. While I wasn't there for health, health was a big piece of that. And I worked with the local Red Cross and other NGO groups on health pieces, even though that wasn't my main goal when I was there. So, yeah, it definitely informed me and has shaped my who I want to focus on with health in our community, as well as how I approach it, thanks to the training I got with that background.
Very good.
Awesome.
How about you, Dr. Geist? Tell us a little bit about your background.
I also came to nursing later. I was a high school chemistry and physics teacher, so before I became a nurse. And I think the same reasons. I was moving and looking for careers that I could still serve people, but you know, maybe in a different way and with a different paycheck.
So you went from teaching to teaching.
Yes,
I love
exactly.
That for a better paycheck.
Exactly. So, I've had a awesome career at Tennessee Tech. I started in 2004, and just been a great career.
Wonderful. Well, it sounds like you've both had very diverse careers with many years combined in nursing, even though it was a later in life career choice for both of you. Can you each share some of the key milestones or maybe the roles that have shaped your background and professional journey so far?
I think for me, the first was a postdoctoral fellowship that I did with the bioengineering department at Vanderbilt. That postdoctoral fellowship was all about redeveloping curricula to really make it about critical thinking and judgment and instead of just maybe memorizing formulas, the application of those concepts. And so everything that I learned in that postdoctoral fellowship really shaped my philosophy of teaching, how I approach teaching. And I think people, you know, they when they talk about that, they think about active learning. And so that certainly is a big part of it. It also, because I was working with engineers for a year, when I came to tech, I immediately reached out beyond nursing to form partnerships and relationships with the engineers. And that has always been a big part of what I do at Tennessee Tech. I'm not just in nursing, although that's my home, but I've worked with faculty on research grants and courses with faculty from pretty much every other college at Tennessee Tech. And I don't think I would have done that if I hadn't had that experience.
Yeah, that's amazing.
For me, I would definitely have to go back to Peace Corps as a key piece for how I view my current nursing and engagement with the community. Peace Corps is a very grassroots type of volunteer job, and you have to work with the community, and you do a lot of investment in people and relationships, mm-hmm. and to make very beautiful long-term changes that benefit others. And I really brought that with me into nursing, even though my project was not healthcare at all again with that. And now that I am an educator, a nurse educator, I get to be in community courses and also work with Dr. Geist on community outreach, getting back into the community and making those changes and those meaningful relationships here. I would say that is the key piece for where I'm at today.
Speaking of that, that is a perfect segue, Ms. Cass, into your recent initiative that you guys have and project that you have in our community in the Upper Cumberland, and that includes all 14 counties, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
So tell us more about this project and what it is, the name, what it means to you guys, what really motivated you guys to create it.
That is Estar Sanos, which in Spanish means to be healthy. And in, I guess it was around 2019, 2020, Rebecca Tolber, an incredible supporter for the Whitson-Hester School of Nursing, she started a faculty research fund. And that research fund provided seed money for faculty to pursue projects. And so Estar Sanos, that was the original seed funding for Estar Sanos. It was in the middle of the pandemic. We needed outreach to the rural communities, to Spanish-speaking communities, to help them mitigate the effects of COVID. And now, I guess, we're up to 28,000 Tennesseans have died of COVID. So that was the start.
Right. That's, motivator.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So that seed money allowed us time to write two more grants. We had another grant from the American Association of Colleges of Nursing, and then we have a grant from the Tennessee Department of Health. And, you know, we talk about it as sharing our Be Healthy message. That includes vaccinations, mm-hmm. All vaccinations. It includes knowing your numbers for metabolic syndrome, which is this cardiovascular nightmare of central obesity, hyperlipidemia, which is high cholesterol, and diabetes. So decreasing screen time for children and adults, healthy active lifestyle. So we share all kinds of resources in Spanish and English at community health events. We've held about 50 or participated in 50 events since we started and reached about 4,000 people with our conversations.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful news. And especially that you started out with a small project, which is, I think, should be important to the listeners, that you started out very small. But then it grew.
Yeah.
And then it grew to the estate, you know, fund that you currently have. With those outreaches that you guys do, what health disparities specifically are you trying to correct or connect mm-hmm. Upper Cumberland residents to?
I would say the biggest one is access to care. So in our rural counties, whether access is a physical barrier or it's a language barrier, we have to try to overcome this access to care. And as nurses, that's part of our pledge.
That's what we have to do, and
we want to do it. Mm-hmm. And so by going out into the community, we're taking our message to them, and we're hooking them up with resources that are available that they may not have even have known about.
Right.
Starting in December of 24, we've also been able to not just talk about vaccines or healthy lifestyle, but we've partnered with a group called Health Heroes where we've been able to actually offer vaccines.
That's amazing.
Well, we're going to get back to this. Dr. Melissa Geist and Mrs. Carrie Cass discussing public health and healthier communities in the Upper Cumberland. Dr. Melissa Geist and Mrs. Carrie Cass are our guests today on Local Matters, Health Matters. We're talking public health. I'm Dr. Jennifer Mabry.
And I'm Dr. Emily Lee, nursing professors from Tennessee Tech University.
In our last segment, we were talking and discussing your project, Dr. Geist, Astar Sanos. So you gave us numbers and the impact, and, you know, that is incredible what you guys have done in a short amount of time with limited resources.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how do you see Astar Sanos evolving, maybe in the future? Because, as you know, every good plan has a sustainability plan. So what do you guys kind of project?
Well, I have a dedicated team first, and so with Ms. Cass, and then we have two faculty from the Department of Foreign Languages, Dr. Josh Martin and Dr. Mark Groundland, who volunteer their time. They get nothing for everything that they do for us. So Astar Sanos, even beyond our funding period, will be there. We have developed so many connections, places like El Puente, which is a Hispanic community outreach program, just local churches, and we just did an event with the First United Methodist Church here in Cookeville. So that network and those connections are not going to go away, and we really do want to sustain those. So we'll continue what we're doing, and of course, always looking for external funding.
Right, new partners too.
To sustain the financial part of what we do. But yeah, we hope to continue for a long time. Probably one of the best things I've done in my career, the study abroad with you.
Yes, yes.
And you, Ms. Cass. And, yeah. Astar Sanos.
Yes.
Certainly the highlights of what I've done.
Agree. I think reaching out and providing healthcare access to the most vulnerable people in our mm-hmm. community mm-hmm. Should be top priority.
Yeah,
for all of us.
Yeah.
But yeah,
and the cool thing is the impact it has on our students, because our students are with us. They are learning.
Good point.
How to teach people who are maybe not receptive how to use motivational energy, interviewing.
I knew what you meant.
Motivational interviewing. How to approach people with empathy and trying to understand where they're coming from. Those kinds of conversations have to be initiated, and we need those kinds of conversations, but you have to know how to come about that. And our students, we're training our students to do that.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Wonderful.
Cultural humility, learning about other cultures. Mm-hmm. We're talking public health and healthy communities with Dr. Melissa Geist and Ms. Carrie Cass. Switching gears just a little bit from talking about the project, let's talk a little bit about social determinants of health. So social determinants of health are critical in understanding health outcomes. So could either of you explain what is actually social determinants of health. You know, what are they? Why they're so important to the work that you both do, especially with underserved populations.
Yeah, so I'll start it out. So what are they? They are those non-medical factors that influence everyone's health. And these are everything from where you're born, where you work, where you end up living, maybe where you worship, your age, what you study. So all those pieces of who you are come together to influence how your health is currently. And as we are all very unique people, those pieces affect us very differently. And the importance can be extremely major for a lot of us. We reach out to those rural populations. So when we are thinking about places where we work, we can think of how safe that is, what exposure that person might have. A healthcare worker is going to be exposed to maybe a lot of different infectious diseases, whereas someone maybe working in a factory might be exposed to some dangers to the fingers, body parts, or temperatures. With education, some people are very aware of health and what it means to be healthy and how to access the medical system, whereas others maybe haven't been exposed to that. Maybe they have no one in their family who is a medical person, or they're not. And so their education about the healthcare system might be very limited, and that can really affect how they access and what they know about medical care. Other pieces such as age, as we age, I like to tell my students that our bodies change a whole lot. And so we can't expect the same thing in our 20s with our health and what we are able to do and what we need as when we are in our 80s. So I think of all of those pieces as coming together. And when we're reaching out, we're thinking about those different aspects, such as for our younger population, we're talking to them about the screen time that Dr. Geis talked about to help them make good, solid choices that will lead into a healthier adult life. And for our older population, we're talking about those numbers like Dr. Geis mentioned before as well. Do you know those? Do you even know what those numbers mean?
Right. Do you know what your blood pressure is?
Yeah.
Is that good? Is it bad?
Yeah. Exactly. And do you know how to get those numbers?
Right.
And who to access for that? So I think of all of those as the big pieces for what we're thinking about.
I do have one question on that. Cultural component. You know, non-English speaking residents in our community. Do you see differences culturally in how they eat, how they, you know, transportation, housing, education level? Can you speak briefly to that? How are you guys tailoring to those cultural, and what do you see?
There are differences. One thing that we might see, and again, it's not across the board, but sometimes there will be multi-generational or multiple families that are in, you know, maybe a single household. So you have to think about if you see one child with RSV or the flu, who else is in that household, who's home. One interesting thing that we found out, and this is true about the rural population and our Spanish speaking population. What we found with the Star Saunas and our outreach events is sometimes people are not like vaccine. Let's just talk vaccines. Or they're not vaccine hesitant?
Right.
They don't have access. If you get the access to them, they are all about it. We were just at the RAM clinic, which remote area medical.
Right. And free clinic.
Yes, free clinic. We administered about 50-ish vaccinations. And
that's incredible.
There were all kinds of takers. people who did not have access to shingles vaccines, who definitely needed them, you know, flu, tetanus.
Yes.
I mean, they didn't, you know, tetanus. So when we offer them, they're there, and they're all about it.
Mm-hmm. And that is public health. That is taking the access to people.
Yes.
And public, especially public health nurses. I mean, that's the core of what we started with way back. Okay, that's wonderful
I feel,
to know.
Yeah. Sometimes the our Spanish-speaking population would kind of maybe circle around our table but not come up. Or so we actually send – we have, of course, Ms. Cass, who's fluent. Dr. Martin and Dr. Groundland are fluent. We actually have
– Fluent in Spanish?
Yes, fluent in Spanish.
Okay.
We have Spanish-speaking students, graduate students.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
They go to them.
Yeah.
So they don't wait for them to come to our table. We have swag bags with information, and we'll go to them and say, you know, this is what we're doing.
Perfect. So not assuming anything with this population, but taking in all those social determinant factors.
More on public health with Dr. Melissa Geist and Ms. Carrie Cass.
Our guests today are Dr. Melissa Geist and Ms. Carrie Cass on Local Matters, Health Matters. Going to change the topic again, okay? Dr. Geist and Ms. Cass, thinking about public health and hearing about your project, A Star Sanos, let's talk about health prevention. You guys have kind of told us what you have done and what the project's about. So let's focus on what people can do to prevent these illnesses or prevent sickness. So prevention is key focus of your work. How important is it to promote preventative health measures within the rural community in the Upper Cumberland? And if you don't mind, could you give us some specific health issues that you focus on in your outreach as far as prevention?
Okay, yeah. So prevention is so important. We all want to be healthy. We all want to stay out of the hospital, stay out of the doctor's office. And that's what prevention does for us. And so promoting that prevention is about being educated about health and what can keep us out of those areas and doing the things that we want to do for as long as we can. With that, what we have been doing, and we talked about it a little bit, is we've had vaccinations available with a lot of our different events, as well as that health information that we hand out for our populations that we interact with. In our grab bags and our swag, we have a lot of different pieces for resources, like we mentioned, because not knowing your resources can really prevent you from finding what you need to stay healthy. And so those are a lot of the main pieces that we do. What would you add to that, Dr. Geist?
Specific resources,
Yeah, I would say one thing is everything that we have is it's written at the sixth grade reading level. Mm-hmm. So this was a great exercise for our students as well. So our students developed some of our information flyers, and the first ones they turned in, they had to redo those and get them at the correct reading level. So the other thing is, you know, when we think about health departments, which sometimes are underused, people don't understand how health departments work, the fee schedule, those kinds of things, so we can help provide information like that. Upper Cumberland Development District has all kinds of transportation. Those are all on our website, and so we try to share those. We have a little bookmark that we hand out that has those kinds of things to help.
What about eating healthy? So those are great resources for transportation and then where to get access to health care. How about when they go home and you're giving them those pieces to read? So what specifically for food choices do you guys have?
Do you know, we have not concentrated as much on nutrition as we have on activity and exercise.
Perfect.
Now, we do definitely have, so for kids, there's an activity book, and it has things that they can do, but also has like active games they can play. Mm-hmm. So our goal is to get kids off the screens, get off the phone, get off the tablets. And so, you know, helping them, with
I believe, you know, some of your swag.
Yeah, jump ropes, yeah, beach jump balls.
Ropes. Perfect. Perfect. Yes. Yeah.
So we really have concentrated on the movement aspect more than nutrition aspect. But I think that's a really
maybe
excellent
that's a future
point.
Goal.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, because that all has to come together.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, we all understand screen time.
Yes.
That's a huge barrier right now to being healthy.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
That's what all that was about.
Yeah.
Perfect. I think the next question, I'd like to kind of switch topics because I want to make sure we get to this point. So, Dr. Geist and Ms. Cass, let's talk a little bit about misinformation and disinformation because those are two different things.
Right.
And specifically how people get their health information through the social media aspects. And I'm talking Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, even an online news, if it's not somebody that's accredited or
right.
proven.
Yes,
yeah. podcast. Yeah. So I really would like to get into that with you guys, if that's okay. With the rise of this social media misinformation about health topics, has this become a significant challenge for you guys with Astar Sanos? And can you give us some examples?
Oh, definitely. Gosh, when we first started, our focus really was on COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many
conversations.
Yes, conversations that were extremely hard and sometimes very aggressive from things that people had heard on social media. And
when you would go to these events.
Yes.
So
yes,
early
yes.
on, people were verbally argumentative.
Very, very much so.
Okay.
Very much so.
Wow.
And
okay.
so we actually got to the point where we developed some scripts. So when people were saying, you know, there's a microchip. Of course, we always ask, why do you believe that?
Right.
So we're kind of trying to figure out where they're coming from. And then say, you know, well, there are no microchips, or we don't have that technology. As a matter of fact, we wish we did, or that it's going to, you know, it's going to change your DNA.
Right.
I mean, we would love to change people's DNA that easily, because then things like cystic fibrosis or
cancer.
Yes. Yes.
I mean,
we can't change it.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
So yes, it was it definitely, and you know that's where a lot of things started, but it certainly carries over now into all vaccinations, and we're seeing this very dangerous decline in vaccination rates.
Yeah, so. Because of that misinformation.
Yes,
and yeah, people have generalized to all vaccinations.
Absolutely.
I agree, because even in my practice, I'm seeing pertussis reoccur.
Yes,
in my lifetime as a nurse practitioner, I never thought I would see this much pertussis in our community.
Yes,
measles. I never thought I would have to diagnose measles.
Right.
As a nurse practitioner.
Yeah,
so,
same.
Absolutely. This can you tell the difference between misinformation and disinformation for the listeners?
Yeah. So misinformation is information that people are just repeating in a benign way. They hear it. It's an anecdote. They share it.
Yes.
Disinformation is to influence. It is to sway people, it's to appeal to emotions and to get people to act on something. So disinformation is a bit more insidious, you know.
It's I
a little
it's kind more of nefarious.
Yes,
I
it
do.
Kind of creeps in, and so yes, yeah.
And I do see that, especially in the Upper Cumberland and Central Appalachia.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you see this with your non-English speaking clients too that you're interacting with. There's a lot of folk medicine that kind of feeds into that misinformation that's passed down, and you talked about multi-generations living in one home and so that's how that also can get passed down, not dis but misinformation,
right? Exactly.
They just don't understand the root cause.
Exactly.
I think that's important for listeners to understand. So
yeah.
What steps do you think healthcare professionals can take to combat misinformation? So as healthcare professionals, how can we combat that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing is to speak up. If you hear it, if you see it, you need to correct it and to make sure that that people are not walking around, you know, believing things that are not accurate. Mm-hmm. You know, thinking about coming from a place of empathy when you're talking to people, and trying to understand why they're doing, because most of the time it is mis or disinformation. Yeah. They have heard it I always say this, they're called influencers for a reason.
Yeah,
those social media people are called influencers for a reason. And for a lot of those people, you will notice that they will share something. So let's say it's some kind of supplement. So they'll share some kind of piece of misinformation, and then they'll say, you can purchase my vitamin A protection pack for whatever it is. So their intro is to get you to not think about doing the measles vaccine, because there's this other holistic thing that you can do instead. And then they're going to try to sell it. That's mm-hmm. always a red flag,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
They're trying to sell you something, so they're doing that on purpose.
Yeah. They're getting compensation for
yes.
some of that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But the thing that I think worries me the most is this really rapid decline in trust of scientists, mm-hmm. scientific method, and public health experts. And that is dangerous. That's a dangerous decline. And that's something that keeps me up at night. So as healthcare providers, if any opportunity that we have that we can gently refocus mm-hmm. on science, what science is, how science works, and why
we need it.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. Yeah. 500 studies that say X and Y are not connected cannot be overturned by one study that somebody does going in saying, well, we're going to prove that these are connected. That's not how science works.
Right, right.
And it's not an opinion.
No.
No. It's a fact.
It is a fact. I agree. That, Dr. Lee and I actually just went to a conference for academic faculty and what we're teaching nurses. And that was a big topic there as well. Mm-hmm. And what I found interesting from that was, everybody's using AI.
Yeah.
Everybody's Googling everything.
Yes.
So the concern there is the same. What people are entering into AI and entering as answers will pop up on somebody's social media, will pop up on somebody's mm-hmm. Google search. And so it generates and propagates more misinformation.
Right.
Your search is only as good as the information that goes in.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes.
So if you ask a general question, you're going to get a general answer. We discussed National Public Health Week, and we're reminded that health is about more than just doctor visits. It's about where we live, where we learn, where we work, and where we play. A healthier community starts with awareness, and it grows through action. Thank you for tuning in to Local Matters, Health Matters. Until next time, take care and be well.